dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to show 235. It is season 8 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. I'm Bruce Knox, one of your three hosts for the podcast. We appreciate you being with us. We want to remind you, though, that we are sponsored by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe. Opens 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and they have all those good eats and all that activities that you're looking for. Lots of fun out there. They're playing soccer. I saw some pictures today on Facebook playing soccer at the facilities there. Give them a call at 740-773-7529. If you didn't get that one, I messed up there. 740-773-7529. And, of course, you can look them up on the web at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. When you think of fun, think of Triple Crown. Thank them for sponsoring SVC Sports Talk. We would appreciate it. And now I'd like to bring in the two guys that know everything about the SVC and all the sports going on. First, I'd like to say hello to John Bruce. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Bruce?
I'm very well, thank you. Good night to be together. We're taping on Sunday night, so we're together in the studio here. Appreciate you bringing all that good food in for us tonight. And I'd like to say hello to our senior partner here. And I say senior only because he's the senior sports guy, not the senior dude pushing the buttons. That would be me. And that is one Mr. Shane Combs. Shane, how are we?
Oh, this week, outstanding, guys. Great agenda. Looking through the website this week, I mean, wrestling underway. We got our wrestling on there, our junior high, freshman, JV. We covered all across the league. And then, you know, of course, our varsity scoreboards up and at it. And going to talk a lot of basketball tonight. But great fan feedback this week. Really excited.
Well, we're going to start off with something we're going to call hoop headlines. We're going to give each guy an opportunity to kind of give us what impressed them throughout the week. We're going to start with John Bruce. And, John, we're going to start with the boys' side, first of all. So what are in your hoop headlines this week?
Don't let a slow start hamper your thoughts on the SEC.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the league went 2-10 this weekend, which is obviously disappointing. But the fact that the league was playing these difficult games, challenging themselves, I think should give everyone, you know, a positive outlook on the season. Because, I mean, when you face teams like Hilliard, Davidson, Logan, Amanda from the Central District, which are all different styles than you're going to see in our area, and then seeing strong teams in the Southeast like Vinton County, Portsmouth, Alexander, Chesapeake, Valley, I mean, that's much better than just going out and getting easy wins over the first weekend. And, you know, it's not what we were hoping for, but I think it'll make the league a lot more prepared throughout the season, especially when league play begins on Friday. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the league does this weekend.
All right. Shane, what are your hoop headlines on the boys' side?
Guys, it's always interesting because, as we've said so many times on the show over the years, we don't talk about these things in a pre-meeting at all. You know, we just go and kind of really try to make it natural in terms of our opinions coming out. And John and I are really spot on. John and I were split all weekend in terms of going different places, so we didn't even really watch basketball together. But John, I'm right on the line with you. I go with patience, please. I think if you are overreacting to the first weekend, it is possible you didn't listen to SVC Sports Talk on the preview show on the boys. You know, we were sitting here telling you that a league that said goodbye to a Swingle and Purdue and Hartman and Slackhammer and Hill and Fisher and Kennedy and Beam and so forth, not to even mention a lot of other, you know, role players across the league that we talked about, a Nunnemaker and Odell, so forth. The I just think that it takes time to do that. Then you throw in what John just said with who they're playing. it's just going to take some time. You know, I was joking with someone today, guys, maybe we could get Kirk Herbstreit to talk to the OHSA, and maybe we could award some teams a half a win for just trying hard.
That'd be nice.
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know. Seriously. I mean, you look, Adina lost the game. Maybe they should have won. Certainly played well enough to win, it sounds like. Huntington certainly could have got a split if not going through some different adversity. Paint Valley got a split. Piketon kind of a coin flip. Sound like they ended up stealing one and then letting one get away. Southeastern, that's impressive going to Alexander. A lot of people think they could win the TVC this year. That's a hard place to play. Uniode at Logan, they weren't going to win that game. Zane Trace wasn't going to win that game the other night. Yeah, well, Westfall plays a good team. So I just think patience, please, describes real, real well in the opening weekend going into boys league play. I still think this league can be pretty good, but if you didn't think it wasn't going to take a step back and have to reload a little bit here, then again, you just weren't paying attention to the number one preseason headline, which is all the talent lost and that has to be replaced.
All right. Well, those are our hoop headlines on the boys' side. We'll take a look at the girls here, but first we want to mention that North Fork Animal Clinics, another one of our sponsors, Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff, do their best job to care out there at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. They are your place for all your veterinary needs. Give them a call, 773-7387. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 12. And, of course, they have the pet resort out there, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I'm just going to ask, John, did you make it out to see Dr. Lloyd and his staff this week?
No, pets are doing well.
Good. Well, yeah. I'm sure it's one of those bittersweet things when you don't see him. So.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate their sponsorship of our program here. You know, if you happen to be out there, you might mention to them that you'd heard about it on SVC Sports Talk. We'd really appreciate it. So let's continue, guys, with our hoop headlines, and we're going to go on the girls' side. We'll go back to John Bruce and see what he has for the girls' hoop headlines.
While it went as expected, there's still some surprises.
Okay.
I mean, it was the week with the league. It seemed like it went kind of according to plan, but I'll give Shane a little love here. Paint Valley's the margin of victory they had over Piketon was a little bit surprising. Mm-hmm. I wasn't surprised they won, but I mean, a 22-point win, no matter where you're at, over Piketon and scoring 71 points is really impressive. Another thing that kind of surprised me, I think most of us thought Uniota would beat Huntington, but I don't think we thought that it was going to be 45-33. And you would think with those two teams, they're going to put up some points, but man, it was a battle. Tons of defense, just players diving all over the floor. Wasn't great shooting, but a lot of that had to do with the defense that was played by both teams. And I'm really looking forward to that rematch after the new year.
All right, Shane, your hoops headlines for the girls' side.
Probably for me, it's too early to tell. Not quite the same mindset on the boys, where it's more about being patient and letting teams come along. This is probably just too early to tell. I don't know that I watched anything or read about anything that just, you know, shocked me. It's just kind of what happens is, remember I talked about matchups in the preview. I think we just need a little bit more of a sample size and some different types of matchups to be able to tell. I know the league, I don't have that in front of me. Just two non-league wins, I think, maybe around 2-5. But I mean, I know Vinton County, McLean a couple times, Logan Elm. Yeah. There's just like we said on the boys' side, there's some teams there that, gosh, are really good. I mean, they're on the schedule. You get better from them. You could argue they shouldn't even be on those particular schedules. The Southeastern, I think that's a great start for them. Yeah, I didn't want to speculate on the preview show, but the website was told that Skylar Heiss has had shoulder surgery now. The shoulder seemed a lot worse than they thought maybe when they got in there, but from everything we was reported to us, it went well. So our thoughts and prayers out to her. She's certainly one of our website's favorites throughout all the sports she plays. And gosh, with them going through that, John, what an incredible gift Macy Graves comes to school coming in. I was told after the preview show that one of the reasons she might not have been on her radar is she was a talent that had come in from Chillicothe, according to the message that I was given. And she's been terrific. I know they played two tight games, two standings games, kind of, you know, in terms of where, you know, where they at with Westfall, where's Adina coming in. I know Westfall led that entire game up until the fourth quarter. She scores 15 in that game. You know, a freshman like Chris Wheeler also giving them some offense earlier in the week against Adina, Southeastern. Leading by six most of the way through that before they busted open in the fourth. Graves had 18 that particular night. Again, Huff with 10, Wheeler with 9. So Southeastern's probably a team that jumps out on my radar in terms of going through the adversity without Heist, but looking kind of to a new go-to in Graves there. And yeah, the Huntington playing Uniota certainly didn't mean to bury the lead here. But, like, yeah, to me, guys, what happens against a lot of these defensive pressures – The two kids in the league that I just think could be the X factors, Coleman and Cottrell. I think what they do in terms of handling the ball and running the show allows Josie Fisher to really be involved. Cree Stallings obviously very talented as well. But I think the ball handling and the experience of Coleman and Cottrell really make Josie Fisher tough to handle. At Huntington, maybe later in the year, you get a different story. A kid like a Braden Collins can obviously score. Sounds like she was still able to kind of keep Huntington close in that on the reports I was getting. Obviously Allison Basie will have more time under her belt by the time the second round rolls around. But that's a team that can't really afford a lot of adversity in terms of the depth that they have. So, the one last point I'll make, John certainly talked about the Paint Valley girls, and again, they deserve credit for doing what they did, the 71. Kelsey Dunn had 27 that night. Kelsey's obviously a kid that has worked very hard. You know, with her size, you know, that comes with expectation in our league. People see a tall kid, and they're like, he or she should do this, this, and this. And, you know, there's just more to it in a five-on-five game sometimes. You got to be able to defend on one end, and then on the other end, you got to be able to throw an offense to dribble, pass, and catch enough to get the ball inside. The Westfall score by quarters also, and Adina's competitiveness, I think, is something else that really jumps out at me. And then don't get too caught up with the Piketon thing. This is a team that got in a little foul trouble that night. This is a team starting five is very, very good, one of the really good coaches in our league. So I wouldn't again, sometimes a matchup on a given night, it just goes your way. I think it helped Paint Valley that they had played on Saturday, where Piketon was opening on Tuesday. Sometimes that really helps. So, again, Paint Valley deserves a lot of credit there. But at the same time, I wouldn't get too shook up over the Piketon situation there. They're still going to be a factor in the standings for sure.
All right, guys. Hoop headlines. Appreciate that. And we'll probably continue that throughout the basketball season, I think. Fans, all your emails and texts have shown that you, too, are excited about basketball season. So this week's show is going to be mainly about responding to you. Up next, we'll ask John if he was making a hidden prediction for the Player of the Year race on last week's show. As we come out of the bump, we want to remind you that Crown Hill Golf Club is also one of our big sponsors. They are located up at 9500 U.S. Route 22 in Williamsport, Ohio. And their telephone number up there, 740-986-4653. And we want to remind you that they are having their winter membership sale. So you can take advantage of great savings on memberships right now. For a limited time, you can take 10% off all yearly membership. All memberships are valid for one calendar year. A reminder, too, that they have the gift cards available for purchase. And you can do that online. You can shop from home. URL or the web address, crownhillgolfclub.com/club/store. And you can get on there and take care of a little bit of shopping before the holidays commence here. I'm getting closer and closer every day. So we do turn to email, and the first email, I'll just start to read here, and we'll stop a little bit halfway through and kind of put John on the spot to begin with anyway. I really enjoyed both shows last week, says the emailer. Nice to have basketball back. I had a question about something John said last week. He referenced Elijah McCloskey of Huntington as the best player in the league. Does this mean you guys think he is the front runner for this award? And I'll stop there, and I will put John on the spot, and then we'll see what Shane really thinks he said, and maybe get some thoughts from Shane. So, John, Elijah McCloskey of Huntington, is he the front runner for the award?
It's going to sound like I'm backtracking, but I'm not at all. I actually don't think so. Even if I do think he's the most complete player in the league, I think team success almost always is a major factor in who wins player of the year. I mean, honestly, how else do you think a player like Pierce Mowry only got a co-player of the year and only happened one time in his career? Mm-hmm. McCloskey he's the main guy on Huntington. We'll see what their team success is. Man, he can play. Mm-hmm. Every time I see him, I see something new in his game that really impresses me. While he has more help this year, kind of a more well-rounded team, they still have to have some wins, because you're not going to see someone win player of the year on a lower-end team in the league, okay. At least in my opinion, even though to me it should be who the player of the year was should be
less of a factor. Year. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Shane, your thoughts? I don't know whether you want to say what John was saying last week, but your thoughts, on Elijah.
Yeah, well, I think what John was referencing last week was exactly, I don't think you're backtracking at all, John, because the way John said it, if I remember correctly, was that what gives Huntington a chance every night, even though Huntington's roster top to bottom might be quote unquote the underdog in just about every league game they play, what gives them a chance is they're arguably going to have the most talented individual on the court. And I kind of think that's what you just said here again this week, if I'm following you right.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. I think what happens is when you have an elite guard like Elijah, you go in, Huntington on paper is probably going to be an underdog and the majority, if not all of the SVC games they play. But I think a kid like Elijah gives you an opportunity to control tempo. He's the type of kid that can go out and, as he showed in like their Southeastern win last year at Huntington, he could go out and have a 20-point first quarter on any particular night or a big first half and give you an opportunity. And then if you're in a game late, he also gives you a guy that can take over a game late. I think what happens, though, in Huntington's situation is they're going through different things in their program right now. And throughout a league schedule, if they're not able to finish, at least middle of the pack or maybe a little higher than the expectation, I think when it comes time for this type of voting, it probably takes him out of that running. I still think he would be a legitimate candidate for first team. I just think that in the actual player of the year vote, most people look away from that. What's funny about this, guys, I think if you're going to draft a player and you were to pull the coaches maybe off the record and ask – the talent, the leadership, the guard, the impact on both ends, so forth, I think he'd go very, very high, if not at the top. But the only other thing I'll say there with Elijah, kid I know pretty well, is these three sport athletes that get to the end of their career. He's on varsity sport number 11 here, guys. And baseball will obviously be his 12th in 4 years. It can start to take a toll on the body. And then you start to prepare your body. You start to pick out one of those sports you want to play in college, and you start to prepare your body a little bit differently and so forth. And it becomes a little bit different. You know, condition. conditioning becomes a factor, different things where you don't have maybe as much time in the off season to work on particular things. So I think you also have to be patient. I think Elijah's best basketball is ahead of him here. I think as he gets in some basketball shape and so forth, the perimeter shot will come a little bit more. I know the other night he accidentally had 20 and really struggled at the free throw line. So I think some of his best basketball's ahead. So he's certainly going to be one of the elite kids to watch. Fans will enjoy watching him. But in terms of player of the year, I think it would be probably not the proper thing to say on a show like this to call him the front runner for that type of award, Bruce.
Okay. The email goes on, guys, and has some interesting questions that I thought we'd throw in here, too. They wonder who else is in the running. And who is a sleeper pick for this award? They go on to say, thanks, if time allows for it on the show. Love to hear some comments about this on the girls' side as well. So first, who else is in the running? Who's a sleeper pick? And then maybe comment, if you can, on the girls' side. And I'll throw it to Shane maybe first here on this.
Well, John, on the boys' side, I think everybody in a way is a sleeper pick because I hate to keep going back to it, but when you lose so much from your league the year before, I think there's new stars born. There's new people going up and roll. And so everybody kind of comes from off the radar, if you will. I saw Cam Evans Saturday night. And if Zane Trace is the pick at the top of the league and they were to go on to win the league, he's certainly a kid on my radar. He's terrific. He's really, really good. Mm-hmm. They showed him moving off the point a little bit the other night, and they run that sideline break and they push that ball up the side to him. He becomes dynamite in secondary break. I mean, you better run in transition. You better get ahead of him, and your backside midline better run diagonal, or he is just going to live in the paint, and he's a problem. If he's doing it against Hilliard Davidson, I guarantee he can do it in the SVC. And then guys from around the league. The first weekend's a short sample size, but man, Ruby's really taken on a different scoring role with Southeast really going. I know the game you covered the other night for us, John Blanton, seemed like he really scored it. Mm-hmm. Newland McFadden. Now, see, there's an interesting thing, too, guys. When we start talking player of the year, Newland McFadden kind of sharing in the role this year. A lot of times, can teammates cancel each other out? I don't know. I think it's more important that you win. I think that's where the individual success comes from, as we just talked about in our first part of this answer. Fout of Adina is a kid that I know a lot of people have talked to me about. So, ZT is at the top. I think that's probably where it starts. I thought what you said about Mowry is a great example here recently in our league, where you really have to put your team toward the top, or at least in the top half, to win these types of awards. But it's just kind of funny to me here, guys. Uniota's carrying such a historic streak in, yet you almost wonder if this opening weekend's not a must-win for Zane Trace. I think it sounds silly for me to say that, but I really think it's an important game for Zane Trace. I really do, in terms of getting off to the right start. And then quickly, like you said, time-wise, Bruce, before I throw it to John there on the girls' side, mm-hmm. I think the girls' side's more cut and dry. I could sit here and list about 8, 9, 10 really, really good players for the girls.
Yes.
But because this is going to come down to the standings, you know, there's certainly going to be some teams that could possibly challenge and knock off a Huntington or Union on a given night. But over the course of 14 games, if those two seem to be everybody's pick at the top, it's kind of a Braden Collins, Josie Fisher type of race, in my opinion. And we'll kind of have to let the team things play out. I think more of the debate on the girls' side will come in those 3 through 5 spots first team.
All right. And John, I guess kind of switching sides here over to the girls, maybe you mm-hmm. can provide some thoughts on that. I know Shane got a lot of different people in there, mentions of a lot of different guys. So
I would still like to really hear John's take, because you've watched who, Blanton the first weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to see him, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on him, because I think Piketon could be a sleeper in this league as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Shane, what the favorite would probably be Cam Evans. I mean, he's an outstanding all-around player. His team's the favorite. But he's also he's dynamic. He's a problem for the rest of the league because size and ability to get to the rim, to go with just all of his overall talent, I think gives him a chance to be the favorite. Another one would be Adina Zach Vout. leading scorer from last year. Super difficult matchup with his length and athleticism. Then, like you said, Ruby and Blanton. I got to watch both of them yesterday, and they're both just super quick and very strong for point guards. If you looked at Ruby, you see him, you know, he's put together. You can be strong. But when you look at Blanton, he's a little more slender. But, man, he does not get knocked off the ball. He finishes hard at the rim. And he's an outstanding player. For Piketon and Southeastern to get to where they want to be, both of those two are going to have player of the year type years.
Right.
And I think they both can really do it. They both have a lot of younger teammates. I mean, Southeastern played either three or four freshmen yesterday, a couple playing at key moments against a pretty good Portsmouth team. And, you know, they're going to get better as the year goes, but Ruby's going to have to keep them above water until they are fully prepared to play. But those freshmen are going to be nice from Southeastern. So definitely watch for them. Blanton had a lot of guys that were making their first real varsity experience yesterday or this weekend. And he had two buzzer beat. Well, I guess three technically, cause he hit a three at the end of the game too, but it, you know, didn't admit it a point game instead of four, but he's taking last shots of each quarter. And you can just tell the confidence his teammates have in him to get it done. So I would say those four, along with McCloskey, are probably the favorites, or would be the five that I would look at and maybe follow all year. But like you mentioned, Newland and McFadden, both dynamic. For Uniota, look for Cade McKee and Isaac Little. Those are two guys that are going to have to play or be big for Uniota. And, you know, they're both a year away from being bigger, physically stronger, and being upperclassmen. But those are two really good players that I would keep an eye on. And if we're going to, say, Westfall, Trent Hampton's a player that's dynamic, can do a lot of different things on the court. You know, every team has at least one guy that can really carry the load, and will be very interesting to see. Now, for the girls, like you said, Braden Collins and Josie Fisher. Fisher, she's super, super efficient. She's never out of position, like ever. I mean, she uses her body so well. I kind of wish our kids, like our boys, would watch just to see how well she positions herself, because she just always can kind of root out her the person trying to box her out and get herself in better position for offense rebounds. It's just really impressive. Collins does a little bit of everything. And obviously, I mean, her career numbers are going to be just ridiculous when you consider that she's only going to play 3 years of varsity. Then if we're going to go dark horses, you know, we mentioned Macy Graves from Southeastern. She had a great opening week at Southeastern. And I'll say another one is Uniota's Amber Cottrell. She completely, and you mentioned it with Cottrell and Coleman, but Cottrell completely dominated that game against Huntington, and she had 2 points. Seven steals. She took two or three charges during the game. I mean, just huge momentum changes. I mean, she's a really special player as a point guard and on the defensive end.
Hey, real quick too, John, I'm fascinated by the Piketon boys this year. I think people that listen to the show, they know that. How big is Blanton this year? For people that haven't seen him play over the summer, how much taller and how much stronger would you say he is?
He looks like he's grown a couple inches. So I'd say 5'10", 5'11".
Okay.
In warmups, this is not to slight the Piketon players, but they all try to dunk it, and he's the closest one to doing it. Like, he's very athletic.
So athleticism-wise, he's really taken another step.
Yes.
Because he's always been a very skilled kid. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good. He's always been skilled and quick. But you can tell that he's put in the work in the weight room, too. I mean, like I was saying about Ruby, how he's, you know, it's muscular, you can tell. But you can just tell that he's – really strong kid. And I would say he probably put on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. I mean, he looks a little bit different. He has a ton of confidence, and it's not in a cocky way. He knows when he's getting his shot that it's more than likely going in, because he's got great rotation on a shot, great elevation. Just, you know, he's going to be a fun player to watch. And they have another player. He's a junior that he played a little bit towards the end of last year, Jacob Matthews.
Yes. He was a factor late in the year last year. Yeah.
Yeah. When I mentioned Josie Fisher on using their body, he's a kid that uses his body just unreal, just does a great job, moves really well for his size. I mean, he's 6'2", 6'3", just really, really solid player. And that's something they're going to need because they have the quickness on the outside. Scott Lytle played outstanding yesterday also. It was good to see him do a little bit more on the offensive end, because he's always been a great defensive player. But, you know, he's a little more active on offense. They're going to be a really difficult matchup with a lot of teams because of the pressure they can put on. And I think throughout the year, they're going to handle pressure a little bit better than they did last night. Chesapeake just got rolling at the end of the game. I mean, you know, sometimes those things happen, especially early in the year with not a lot of experience. But they're a team that, you know, they're going to be really fun to watch, and they're a tough matchup.
And that's good stuff there. I really think the basketball fans listening will appreciate that. Bruce, I certainly didn't mean to get off topic there too much. I know I'm guilty of doing that time to time over 8 years.
I think you did that once, yes.
but to kind of summarize back on the question, certainly appreciate the fan feedback. It was a great question. Mm-hmm. I would probably call Elijah more of the sleeper. Because of his talent with his team down low, I would put Cam Evans probably there at the top of the list with many of those names we said. And then on the girls' side, probably you have the Josie Fisher leading a team that is going to probably be the big favorite to win it all, with Braden Collins obviously as the front runner with what she's going to do career wise as well. But certainly appreciate that email. Good stuff there.
All that generated by just dropping us a line, and we'll tell you how you can do that up towards the end of the show. So keep listening for that. Guys, up next, we're going to tackle another hot topic dealing with some of the top SVC rookies, as well as some of the tweeners, as one fan put it. Well, our episode 235 rolls on now, and we again want to mention our sponsor, Crown Hill Golf Club, located in Williamsport, and they are having their winter membership sale right now, where you can take advantage of great savings on memberships right now for a limited time. Take 10% off of any yearly membership. All memberships are valid for one calendar year, and of course, they have the gift cards available for purchase online. Don't even have to call or anything. You can shop at home. The email address, or web address rather, for that, crownhillgolfclub.com/club/store. Get on there and spend some money for the holidays. Get your shopping out of the way before we get too far into this. Guys, we've got another email here, and this one's a pretty good one too. I have a feeling this will lead to a little bit of discussion here. Email says, and I know how they feel, "I know I am old, but I think we may have way too many young kids on varsity." First part of the question that they proposed to us is, one, do you guys believe in freshmen playing varsity? John, what say you on freshmen playing varsity?
I think it's case by case, but yes, I believe in it. I mean, but only if it's obvious that they're ready for the speed and physicality of the game. Mm-hmm. You can't watch Huntington and tell me Allison Basie would be better off playing JV instead of in her varsity debut scoring 21.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's, you know, not everyone's ready, but, you know, I think if the way you look at it, you know, throughout the year, kids end up being more prepared as they go on. I mean, my team played against Logan the other night, and they had a freshman who, I mean, he had really no business being on JV, but they have like seven seniors in their rotation, so he plays a little bit of the JV. And, you know, he's one of those kids. Playing is going to be huge for him, but at the same time, like, I'll follow them throughout the year, and I guarantee he's in the rotation by the end of the year. And, you know, they're kind of a different breed with the skill level they have right now. But, I mean, at schools our size, you're going to have freshmen playing varsity at times. Mm-hmm. It's not like I looked at the program for Hilliard Davidson, and they had like 10 seniors on their team. you know, at a school like that, you have more options, and the kids are going to play through it a little bit more. But, you know, at our schools that are not even half their size, like a third or a fourth of their size, you know, and usually it's the kids can play. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're going to be on varsity, there's not going to be a coach that's going to say, you know, I'm going to take a loss because I'm just going to put this kid on varsity. Even if he's not ready, you're going to play kids that are prepared because, you know, you're playing to win, and you're also playing to have kids have the most success they can have. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to handcuff a kid by putting them up on varsity and them not actually be ready.
Mm-hmm. Shane, what do you think about that?
Well, I think when I read this email, it's obviously someone that's at least my age, or I took it maybe someone that's even older than me, or maybe a generation even ahead of me, because when you go back to the history of the game at the high school level, these are things that, you know, that weren't as common. And all I would say is I've kind of grown up through it, and my coaching career has come through right in the middle of it. I would just say welcome to the new high school game that is kind of becoming an everyday result of the poor Little League decisions that were made 10 years ago. The numbers in our programs are way down. The result is that we have a completely different practice setting now that the majority of the schools, our junior high teams, are practicing together. Or JV varsities together, or at least freshman JV together. And a few individuals have been really accelerated through really well. Some of the individuals, I've said this before, have probably come on quickly, but it's killing the overall product. So it's just something that's happening more and more. Now, guys, I think this is more evident on the girls' side. I think that, you know, they mature quicker. It's natural. On the girls' side, maybe to go along quicker, to have that freshman that a lot of people even argue sometimes the girl's really at the peak of her high school talent right around that sophomore, junior year. But on the boys' side, I just think there's more pressure to do so. You've heard me, you know, joke before that and we live in a society now where people look at JV stupid. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're going to ask me to play what? It's one of those where there's more and more pressure to bring kids along quicker. You lose kids. They have more options. They play one place, let's go somewhere else. But I think more and more it's just changing that way. So I certainly can understand why someone who's watched high school basketball for 30, 35, 40 years would feel this way. There's certainly far more young kids coming along now than even 20 years ago. But it's just kind of the way it is.
Nature of things, huh? Okay. They had another question here, and this is kind of a good one too, and I'm dying to hear what our JV coach here says about this. It's the second question says, how do you feel about juniors playing junior varsity? John, why don't you start us off on this one too?
All right. Now, I'll go back to Friday with my game. We played against seven juniors on Logan's junior varsity, and that's one of those Division I things. And with that game, I'll say I disagree because how ridiculous they were. But I agree with it, but that's also in certain cases. I think you can't have someone that's not going to have a great attitude, someone that, you know, like Shane said, thinks, "Oh, JV's stupid, why am I doing this?" You need to have someone that will either, A, help the program as a senior, or be an excellent leader that can bring certain players along or help younger kids kind of get used to the high school game. Now, if you can get both, that's perfect. But, you know, I'll say this year I have one junior on my JV team. He has just an unreal work ethic. He's the type of leader that I want to have around these kids to show them, hey, this is what's expected. You know, we had our freshman group struggled a lot last year in eighth grade. They worked hard, but at the same time, there'd be certain things where you could just tell they couldn't stay focused with what the game plan was. And this is the type of kid that in practice every day with these guys is going to be able to help them along with that. Now, we'll see with next year with him for, you know, varsity playing time or if he even sticks with it. But, you know, he's the type of kid that you want to keep in a program for as long as you can. And I'm going to say this for myself. I was a junior on JV. I was kept, you know, kind of for depth and to help along a freshman point guard. And, you know, somehow during that year playing for Coach Hoops, it kind of renewed my love for basketball. Mm-hmm. And I'll say I ended up starting for the majority of the year as a senior. So it ended up working out in my case. But, you know, not every case is going to be this. And I think it's just you kind of have to look at the kid and what they mean to the program, what the sport means to them also. And, you know, maybe if they have a chance to play college in another sport, you might say, well, maybe we don't keep them in this because it might slow down their progress in another sport also. So it might even be a thing to help the kid on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Shane, your thoughts?
Guys, I think, again, it's just a very old school approach. And, you know, back in the day when schools, they were still cutting at the freshman and JV level. And, John, I don't know, at a school like Uniota, maybe you still have to cut at the freshman JV level. Mm-hmm. Is that true? I mean, is that?
We didn't at the freshman level this year, but we did at the JV level.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that just blows my mind. You know what I mean? Because, again, I'm coming from a different perspective here, guys. It's a situation where, again, this email coming from someone maybe a generation back or maybe a couple back where it's just a very old school approach. You know, back in the day, if you had 10 freshmen out, 8 sophomores, you would be looking at a junior on JV as someone who is taking minutes from a young kid. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Where now the juniors are needed sometimes just to have a JV team, mm-hmm. Particularly at the smaller school for boys and girls. So, you know, there's two or three different reasons why you might. One, you keep them there so that you can have a team, period. Without them, there's many freshmen, sophomores that wouldn't even get the experience of playing. Two, you may have one or two kids that are still someone that you think can play a role a year later as a senior. You can't afford to give up on them. Mm-hmm. What about a situation, you know, maybe you have a freshman post player that's going to be huge to your program, but maybe you have a junior point guard who's never going to play varsity, but that junior point guard can give them an opportunity through that whole JV season to develop. Without them, how are you going to develop a post or something like that? I would even throw in practice situations. I think the average fan has no idea since what Little League's done to our programs.
Yeah.
I think the average fan has no idea how hard the practice floor is for varsity coaches. And I'm sure over the years that the Piketon boys, when I see their incredible love and depth of basketball down there, the Uniota boys, the Uniota girls, I'm sure maybe they don't know what the heck we're even talking about here. But like the smaller schools, it is so difficult to improve your varsity team on a nightly basis because it's so hard to simulate anything at all because you just don't have the depth of athletes to go. A lot of times you're trying to manage a practice 16, 17, 18 kids where you might have someone that is like first team all league all the way down to a kid that can't like be in the drill without messing it up. You see what I'm saying? So like it's a completely different thing. So I totally respect the idea of the freshman, the idea of the junior on JV philosophy, because when I was growing up, Bruce, that's how it was. But I just think that we're in a different time, and I'm not going to turn this into my Little League soapbox, I promise. Okay. But I'm just saying that I tried to, at the beginning of all this to – I don't want to sit here and say I told you so, but I'm kind of saying that.
We had a related text that came in, and It questioned your opinions. I'm not going to express an opinion, but it questioned your opinions about JV girls and potentially freshman boys playing two-quarter games. And I think it kind of goes into what you're saying. It may be part of this, diminished number of people going out for this stuff. What about that, guys? What's your opinion on the JV girls and sometimes, freshman boys playing two-quarter games?
Well, John, I don't really like it. I think it's costing kids a chance to play more. Now, I know some it's legitimate in some cases where it's better to play two than to play zero, I guess, yeah. Right? But I think some people, unfortunately, use it as a strategy to be more competitive. It's funny to me how all of a sudden you're playing this team on a Tuesday night. You have to play two, but then two nights later, oh, we can play four now. You know what I'm saying? So, I know some kids get sick or, you'll run through a situation where a doctor's not going to clear a certain kid till this day or what. I get that. Guys, let me throw this out here and see what you think here. I think the state could really jump in and help a bunch here. I think that – and I would love to get feedback because I know we have tons of coaches and I know we have some ADs and officials from different areas of Southern Ohio and different conferences. I would love to get feedback here. I don't understand why the five-quarter rule still exists. In a time where we are begging our youth to be more active, I mean, are we really going to hurt 14, 15, 16-year-olds from playing an extra 6 to 8 minutes a night? I think six quarters would really help. And I know there's going to be people abuse this for the competitive balance, but I just wonder if we couldn't go to a six-quarter rule with the OHSA where maybe make it no more than three if you're going to do it in both games. So it'd either be a 3-3 or a 4-1 split. You see what I'm saying? So if you're going to play four in one game, then you can only play one in the other. So if you play three in the JV, you have three in the varsity. Or if you play two in the JV, then you don't have the four varsity. So you couldn't abuse the rule, in other words, if that makes sense. So I would love to see a 3-3 opportunity to where we could at least start to stretch some of these JV games out. I don't know. I guess what bothers you about boards who make policies in terms of these things is that we don't get a little bit more creative in these ways. We'll spend hours about compliance in terms about, how big a particular logo should be on a uniform or exactly how far down a girl's headband or a hair thing should be. But we can't get and wrap our mind around some of these more of these discussions because, I've read articles. SEO Preps had a nice link on this, John. If you haven't had a chance to read it, and I would encourage fans, I'll try to link to the website. But this is happening statewide. This isn't just something here in Southern Ohio. So I just think we got to get a little bit more creative in terms of protecting the JV level, protecting the freshman level at the boys game because, you've already seen it hurt the overall product of the game. And I think it's going to do nothing but continue to if we don't get it under control.
John, do you have any thoughts about this, two quarters for JV girls and boys or freshman boys?
I don't know if I could have said that any better than Shane. I mean, but I don't like it, but my reason mostly it counts as a full game for some of these teams that have enough.
Yeah.
And it takes playing time away from those kids. So, we'll say I'll just use Unioto as an example on the girls' side. If they've got a couple freshmen that are going to be pretty good, well, if they don't, they might not be in the varsity rotation. They have a couple sophomores that are pretty good, might not be in the varsity rotation. Well, they might only get to play two quarters a night.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you're going to only play two quarters, I would say extend them. Play 8-minute quarters. If you're so worried about just consolidating the quarters to where we can play more people in the varsity game, well, play a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not gonna an extra 4 minutes isn't gonna wipe out anybody for the rest of the night, and you're paying the officials for the full game anyway, so they can work an extra 4 minutes as opposed to the extra 12 that they'd be working if you just go full time. So, there's got to be a way to adjust this, to make it to where these kids can play more. And if you have a smaller school where you're short on numbers, mean, what if those kids don't get into the game? So you're cutting their game short, and you also may not be using them at the full ability that they can play that night.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah, because a varsity coach knows you can't predict. Sometimes, Bruce, what happens is you need that kid in case you get in foul trouble. Well, what if you don't get in foul trouble? Obviously, your senior point guard is then going to play 29, 30 minutes, and the freshman point guard that you saved isn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now all of a sudden, you've got this young kid in your program where they got – so, yeah, I agree, John. We've got to get more creative in what we're doing, and we may even have to make schools say up front what we're going to do and give people a chance to schedule differently. But it's a problem we need to talk about more for sure.
Yeah, and I'll add this. The Gazette wasn't – they didn't see it that – the Huntington game was had a half JV, so they were really pushed for time on when they got there, because if you're not fully alerted, which I mean I tried to get it out on Twitter and share Mike White, the Union AD's post about it, but you're not necessarily going to see everything. So some fans may have been showing up late because they thought, oh, it's going to be a full game, and you might have missed a quarter of the varsity game. So I think it's got to be out there. Like you said, Shane, it's got to be out there early. We got to – something has to be done, because it's just – it's not fair to me, it's not fair to the kids to not be able to play the full game. You know, that's
well, at least maybe a situation where if you're a bigger school like Uniota – let them know early enough, okay, they're going to just schedule another team to come in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the smaller school that goes through this, say you're in a situation like the Zane Trace numbers, or like the Huntington numbers, or like the Adena numbers have been over the years, or whatever they might be. Even at Paint Valley, I know right now we're a very talented JV team, but man, we're one injury away from being in this pickle ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's a situation where maybe you back off and you try to do some more scrimmage dates or something to where, okay, we don't have to count quarters, we don't have to count fouls, but it's more important just to get these kids playing. You see what I'm saying? Something. We have to get more creative in what we're doing, because the product that we're putting on the court is severely behind in Southeast Ohio, and we need to do something to help increase kids playing the game of basketball, because we're losing kids for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I suggest that Shane Combs gets on the OHSAA board somehow. I think
that would be miserable if I had those meetings and listened to some of that stuff.
Well, you've got some great ideas. I mean, I could see that I could make up bumper stickers, innovation with Combs, you know, the six-quarter rule and so forth. I think it's a great idea. Guys,
maybe they'd have good food at least.
Yeah, well, there you go. You got that going for you. Up next, we try a new segment for SVC Sports Talk as Shane and John think back to their playing days as well as the beginning of their coaching career. Well, as we come out of that bump, again, want to remind you that one of our sponsors is North Fork Animal Clinic. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff so graciously are helping us bring you the podcast. And they are located at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. And they're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 to 12. And then the Pet Resort, where you can take advantage and drop little Cuddles the Poodle off at 7 a.m., as early as 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. And you pick them up as late as 7 p.m. On Saturday and Sunday, they're 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that is North Fork Animal Clinic, Dr. Blake Lording and his staff, 773-7387. We appreciate their support of the podcast. And as we mentioned, we're going to try a new thing here. And I think that this begs for some kind of a sounder, where like old radio music or something like that, where we talk about Coach's Corner. And this is simply going to be for this event anyway. I'm going to say, gentlemen, when I was a player or a younger coach, I wish someone would have told me blank. And so we'll work on the production end of this, Shane, if we're going to do this again someday. But let's go first to John and say, John, when you were a player or a younger coach, you wish someone would have told you what?
I'll go with, as a younger coach, I wish someone would have told me to calm down and keep coaching. Because there were times where, when I was younger, when I was, I mean, really, I started in my early, like when I was 20, and man, I got on the officials just way too much, and I guarantee I didn't coach enough at that time, because I was more worried about what the calls were than how we adjusted to them. And you know, I guarantee it hurt my team more than it ever got me a call. And you know, I'll carry over to baseball. I complained way too much about the strike zone, and that doesn't fix anything. So to me, as a younger coach, you got to remember your team first. If you can talk to the officials, you do it calmly, and really just say, you know, what happened on that call? What can we do different? And see, you know, that's more likely to get you called than, you know, arguing. Mm-hmm. And I really wish it was before I took a break for a few years that I would have realized that, because I think it would have helped our not only my teams, but our program as a whole.
Did you have someone that's a great one, I think, Shane, for John. But John, I just wondered, did you have people talk to you about that, or how did you make that decision? Did you just kind of you watch video or something? Or?
No, I was, because when I kind of moved away a little bit, I came back and scouted some, and there are games where I'd watch other coaches just riding the officials, and it never did anything. And I think, and I remember back, you know, I'd get a couple technicals a year, and they'd not ever really be for a reason. And, I know there's times, you know, sometimes you need to get one, and it's helpful for your team, but I was usually, when I would get them, it wasn't helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was from watching so much,
how other people did it, basically.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not going to say it just because it's Matt Combs or, you know, Matt Hoops, you know, seeing these coaches I respected, like Blaine Maddox from Warren. I mean, these guys, they know how to work the officials in a positive way for their teams. And it's not just a complaining about calls. It's still coaching within, you know, the boundaries of what the calls of the game are going to be. And it was something I didn't notice until I got a little older, a little more mature.
I think maturity might have been the operative word there. Shane, what about you as a player or a younger coach? You wish someone would have told you what?
Man, that's a great one, because I know I was forced into coaching varsity head coach at the age of 19 for a couple games. And then I was the head coach in my early to mid 20s. So, you know, you hang on every call or so forth, you know, and I'll still argue calls now, but nothing like I did then. That's right. A really good, I think that's where this segment can be so good, Bruce, as we go. For me this week, I'm going to go with, I wish someone had told me more about film and the importance of watching film. I started just watching a little bit of film my senior year as a player, and it was so valuable. My IQ increased, and as a point guard, I was able to see certain things from the first time we played an opponent to the second time in the league. I didn't know much about what I was doing. So in coaching, I didn't really use it a lot. Now, the technology is off the charts, and it's used so much for scouting and, you know, things like huddle and the technology. Like right now in the girls' game, John, this isn't as much in the boys' game, although I still think it can be very valuable. Right now in the girls' game, like at Paint Valley, for example, we started the season Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. That's our schedule. So, like, when are you supposed to really pull a kid to the side and work one-on-one? Or when are you really supposed to put in a new X and O? Or when are you supposed to, you know? So what's happened is the value of – I've begged kids over and over to watch 20 minutes of film a day, read my comments on there, ask me about it. And the kids that have bought into it are improving drastically. It's amazing what film is doing. I can't get over how much, you know, like – you can improve from one game to the next. And I think it's just so valuable. So I think I would tell young coaches, you know, you don't have time to sit kids in a room for 2.5 hours. You're going to have to do a little legwork yourself. You're going to have to watch it, either use something like Huddle where you comment, or have already diagrammed and already saved on your computer where you're going to go to these 5 or 6 clips that you want to show. But man, the film, we always say in coaching, that film has a tendency not to lie. You know what I mean? Like if I tell the kid he or she's doing something and they say, "Coach, no, I'm not." Well, right here it is. You know what I'm saying? So to a new coach, it's so hard and help, but I would encourage you, out of all of your checklists, find a parent, a student, someone you can trust, one, to be there every time. Show them some training up front on exactly how to use Huddle. But it gives you a source to where you have it immediately following the game, and you can communicate with every kid in your program within a matter of a half hour after the game. And it's just so valuable. So I think this is going to be a really cool segment for players and coaches. But man, I thought John had an awesome one this week. And for me, Bruce, I would go with film. And I think if with something we'll try to put in each week, just to take 10 minutes at the end of the show or somewhere throughout the show. And I think we can really come up with some good ones. And if we have coaches out there listening or players who have questions, send them in to us, because I think that would be a lot of fun too. Because I know, Bruce, you're getting ready to give some final thoughts on the contact information.
Exactly. Here. That's just what I was going to say. This would be one of those things that somebody else out there probably got some other good things to that we could hear and share as well on the podcast. So if you would like to do, you know, contribute to this particular section of the program, you're welcome to do so, or any other. And you can do that first emailing. And for John, it's email jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And he's on Twitter, or you should always follow him, of course. His handle there, @coconutwallpapa. And while we're talking about Twitter, you want to go with that SVC Sports Talk hashtag. And then Shane is available through email at admin1@svcsportzone.com. On Twitter, his handle is @svcsportzone, and he too uses the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. Facebook, he has two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and svcsportzone.com. And I want to mention and give a shout out to Derek Webb, who I know has been contributing a little bit here in the basketball season when he's not at Big Ten championship games or traveling, I'm guessing, out to the Rose Bowl or something like that. But he uses a Twitter handle of dwebwrites for SVC Sports content. And then, of course, he does have the verified account of DW1509 for his Buckeye news and information. Of course, as always, we ask that you subscribe to the podcast. You can do so searching iTunes for SVC Sports Talk, and you can do the same thing on Stitcher. You can just go to one of the episode posts and put in your email and click on the verification email link. And I guess that's kind of it for content. I did notice, Shane, I was going to mention, there were some others that kind of got into the conversation on Twitter this past week by just using, they were putting out content about their program, but they used SVC Sports Talk, the hashtag. And that got them into one of my filters that I use on Twitter, and I saw their content. So we welcome that as well.
Absolutely. You know, and as we get in, John, I'll talk about a few other features on the website there, but I didn't want to cut you off. If you wanted to go ahead, any final comments there, then I'll share some things from the website here before we get out of here this week.
There's a couple big games on the boys side this week. Chillicothe plays at Zane Trace on Tuesday. Yep. That's, Zane Trace is not taking their non-league schedule lightly. And then, Unioda hosts St. Trace on Friday. That's, like you mentioned earlier, big game in the league. Should be fun. And then we've got games around the league Friday and Saturday in boys. And then the girls are Tuesday this week, correct?
Yes. Yes. A couple non-league Thursday and then some on Saturday as well. But yes, league night's only Tuesday this week. Yep. Okay. Well, and John, I'll apologize to you. I'm getting back into the swing of things here. I just realized when he said the hashtag SVC Sports Talk tonight that I have been forgetting to link your threads on the scoreboard. So I apologize for that. So when John's out covering these games, I'll try to get his threads up on the scoreboard. But as Bruce said, you can always just find those by going to the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. And that's a great way if you're coming home. And you go back and just search that hashtag and read down through, you can kind of almost catch up on your entire Tuesday, Thursday, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, evening, whatever it is of SVC Sports. I also want to talk, Bruce, real quick before we get out of here on the website. Our wrestling page starting to get going. Wrestling got underway. I know up at Westfall this past weekend, a lot of SVC wrestlers. I'd been given some Paint Valley stuff. Congratulations to Adrian Salomon. First place finish. I know Southeastern was in action up there. Isaiah LaFontaine had a first place finish. I think Metzger of Adina. I don't have that up there yet, but that just had come up on the Facebook here. I need to get that added. Huntington was down at Fairland. They had Carol and Maxson with first place finishes. So congratulations to them. But you can always check that out on the wrestling there as well. And get that information to me. I think a really cool article coming up in the next Great Seal Sports magazine on Braden Collins and Javon Moffmer there of Chillicothe, kind of getting a little bit of basketball there into the magazine. So I've really enjoyed that as well. If you're not getting one of those issues each month, let me know, and I'll get word over to Chris Scott and to the great people there at Great Seal Sports and see what I can do to help you in whatever way, figure out a way to do that. So guys, great show. Really, the fan feedback, as always, Bruce, I think you would agree, really drives the agenda. Yeah. It always seems to end up making for a great show, and I think this week was certainly evident of that. So, guys, look forward to doing it again next week. So until then, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, all the other great sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes there at DBK Media Services, certainly appreciate you guys, and for John Bruce. This is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.